Black are gold pants, 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 black podcast.
Good evening and welcome to episode 10 of Blackheart Gold Podcast. We finally hit double digits. My name is Hawkeye State, joined as always by Oops Pal Surprise. Oops, what's shaking?
Everything is shaking. It's an earthquake of happiness today. We're on number 10. It's wonderful.
That's right. We've made it this far. We have not yet been kicked off of iTunes. No one's really quite sure how. We're joined tonight by John, who's the proprietor of Crimson Quarry, the SBN Indiana blog. He's been blogging about the Hoosiers for a couple years now under a couple of different URLs, and has been here at SBN for, I think, about a year. John, how you been?
Oh, not too bad, other than being an Indiana fan the last week or so. Besides that, it's great.
You know, basketball will soon be here. It's okay.
I used to feel that way.
Yeah. That's a good point, I guess. We'll have you back when that comes around. But for now, the talk is football. And in particular, the somewhat surprising and some might say baffling news out of Bloomington this week that Bill Lynch is basically in for the long haul. Apparently, the AD is very big on contracts and has decided that he's going to keep Lynch through the 2011 season. John, what's your take on that?
Well, it surprised me when I read that today, and I'm not sure. There have been a couple different stories on it. I'm not sure if the athletic director quite went that far, but he was pretty adamant about Lynch being back next year, which would suggest that no matter what they do against in these final four games, that he's going to be back. I'm kind of surprised. The Lynch situation was always kind of difficult because obviously he got the job under less than ideal circumstances. He did well in his year as an interim coach, but this is a guy who had a 21-game losing streak when he was the coach at Ball State. He never would have been considered for the job, and the whole rationale behind hiring him was, look, we can keep continuity. We can keep the Heppner staff together. He got to a bowl game in that staff's third year, so we won't have the usual attrition and hiring a new staff and all that, and so maybe it'll work out. But now, 2 years later, it seems like the entire rationale has changed and that we're supposed to treat Lynch as if he was just a guy who happened to become the coach in 2007 or even 2008, and I don't buy it. To me, if we were supposed to treat the coach that way, then they should have done a real search after the 2007 season. So I was kind of surprised, and I was surprised at the way it's the second time that Fred Glass, the new AD, has gone off on this stuff about how contracts need to mean something. Well, I know one of you guys is an attorney. Contracts mean what they say. You're not violating a contract or breaching a contract if you fire a coach and pay him the buyout that he's entitled to under a contract. And the way recruiting goes anymore, players are more sophisticated about this. They know if a coach is coming up to the end of his contract. So I can't make much sense of it. I put a post up that makes clear that I don't quite understand either the reason for backing up Lynch or why the AD is taking this approach with it.
Well, it seems to me that it would be the last thing you'd want to have is him in 2011 as a lame duck without any kind of succession plan in place. We were just waiting for the contract to run out so we can make a new search. And I think you're right about the effect on recruiting. I mean, it's tough enough to recruit football in Indiana as it is, and I noticed you had a kind of a high profile recruit back out and go to Cincinnati this week.
Mm-hmm. The brother of one of our current players, by the
yeah.
way.
Yeah, and
so he's not getting good advice from that brother, or at least I should say, he's not getting favorable advice about Indiana from that brother.
Yeah, and that's you do wonder what's being said there. You would hope that because signing day is obviously not around the corner or anything, you would hope he could hold off. But yeah, it does make you wonder what the brothers are saying to each other.
Now, Indiana so far this year, I think they started, you know, somewhat surprisingly. I don't think that they were necessarily, it wasn't shocking that they won their first three games against directional Kentucky, directional Michigan, and one of the many cities of Ohio. But played Michigan very tough and seemed to be, you know, all systems go up until the debacle at Virginia. But got a win over the Zook the week after that. And then last week, John, I don't know what happened. I'm sorry to laugh, but
I had
chalked that one up as an Indiana win at half. What happened there?
Well, basically, they got out to a 28-3 lead about halfway through the second quarter. At that point, the offense really bogged down. The run game bogged down. Northwestern still didn't play great. They threw three interceptions in the second half, but there were some strange calls. Maybe a couple opportunities to kick a field goal where IU decided to go for it. Part of that may have been frustration. One of the things that hurt IU in the Michigan game and in a couple of other games this year has been the ability to convert in the red zone or to convert on in short yardage situations. So maybe it was just kind of a thought of, well, screw it, we're just going to try to go for it. But they did have a couple field goal opportunities that they passed up and that obviously would have made the difference. I don't know that there's any one reason why a team loses a game like that, but to get out to that kind of a lead and then not be able to score a single point after the midway point of the second quarter is obviously disappointing. And it does follow a pattern, particularly the last 2 years, where IU has really struggled to put up points in the second half. In both last year and this year, they've scored 65-70% of their points in the first half and then have kind of either white-knuckled it through the game or just been blown out, as was the case in last year's Iowa game and many others. But, yeah, it was just one of those perfect collapses, and it seems like Northwestern's always involved in those games on one end or the other.
Yeah.
There it was.
So, do you put that on the coaches? Like, do you say that, that if they're scoring two-thirds of their points before halftime, that they're just not making the right halftime adjustments? Because it seems like Iowa's the exact opposite, where they'll sleepwalk through the first 20 or 30 minutes, and then once halftime comes in and they start doing their teaching and their routines and all that, that suddenly a different team comes out.
Yeah, and I hesitate to make criticisms like that because I'm not really competent to make that judgment as to the specifics of what they're doing or not doing.
Oh, you're a blogger. Come on.
Yeah. I'm in my basement, not my parents' basement. I'm not quite sure. I don't have that kind of knowledge of football scheme to critique it on that level. But, yeah, I think once you're talking about a sample size of 25 or more games and you see that this is consistently happening, that you have to at least suspect that there's some kind of a problem there.
Now, to date, Indiana is 4-4. Clearly this week at home against Iowa, then a trip to Camp Randall, followed by Penn State at home, and then the closer against Purdue. I don't think probably Indiana will be favored in any of those four games, maybe against Purdue since it's a home game. The schedule looks like maybe 5-7 at the best. Is that a successful year for Indiana, given the kind of turnover in the offense and the youth on the team?
Oh, I don't know. It's, like I said, I think the coaching situation kind of warps the whole perspective on where we are. 5-7 is certainly, and unfortunately in the last 15 years, would be one of the better seasons that IU has had. But I think to have had the opportunities that they've had against Michigan and against Northwestern, and to have played, and it gets harder to judge now that everybody's in the 12-game schedule and they played two MAC teams and a 1AA team in the non-conference. I don't know. It's not a disaster. It's definitely an improvement on last year, but But my problem is I can't really evaluate it outside of the context of, hey, I thought we were on the upward trajectory, and that's why we kept Bill Lynch to keep this momentum going. Now we're talking about 5-7 as progress 2 years later. So, yeah, it would certainly be an improvement, but it would also be a bit of a disappointment. This is a pretty senior-dominated defense. So while the offense returns a lot of its parts for next year, I don't know if 5-7 is that much. Is that encouraging? I don't know if it would mean that we were on the right track. So it wouldn't be a disaster, but believe it or not, even in Bloomington, the focus is on trying to get to a bowl game. And when, you know, 8 or 9 Big Ten teams get there every year, it doesn't seem like that unrealistic of a goal. So yeah, sure. Not a disaster, but still a disappointment if we end up at 5-7, certainly 4-8.
Now, Indiana has implemented the pistol this year. This is more or less the first year that it's been kind of run there. I noticed looking at the stats, I mean, it looks like they've gone pretty much 50-50 run pass, pass being a little bit more effective. But, you know, what's your feeling on how the offense has worked in its first new year?
Well, the offense has been okay, and they've used the pistol formation some. They've gone away from it some. They've used a lot of a wildcat-type formation where Mitchell Evans comes in and plays quarterback. I haven't had too much of a gripe with the offense. I certainly have to give the staff credit. They haven't played it conservatively. They've really thrown a lot of different wrinkles at teams. At the Michigan game in particular, they really had the Michigan defense on the ropes at times, and have done some of that against other teams as well. So the offense has been okay. I think from a production standpoint, the biggest problem is that they've struggled in the red zone, and they've struggled at times to establish the run. The running game has been better than it was last year. It could hardly have been worse, other than Marcus Thigpen breaking a 70-yarder every so often. That's pretty much was the entire offense last year. So it's been okay. I'd say mixed results. If you look at the offensive numbers, they aren't great. Ben Chappell's okay. He's fine. He completes 63% of his passes, and it's about even on touchdowns and interceptions. So I'm okay with the offense. It hasn't been a disaster, but it hasn't been any kind of a groundbreaking thing either.
Well, it seems that Chappell's numbers have improved quite a bit this year. That I look back at that post that Doc Saturday did earlier in the year, where he was discussing the Big Ten quarterbacks, and it basically dismissed Chappell as being, you know, undeserving of the spot. And looking at his numbers this year, 1,800 yards on 262 attempts, about 7 yards per attempt, 8 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. It seems that he's made a pretty decent leap forward.
Yeah, he has. And I never thought he'd be as bad as I think coming into it, his career numbers were 53% or something. I think he had played in some less than ideal circumstances, bouncing back and forth into the job with Kellen Lewis last year. So I wasn't too surprised. I didn't think it was going to be a disaster or anything. I didn't think his numbers that he put up in his first 2 years were representative of what he was going to do. He's not going to play in the NFL or anything, but he's been a solid guy. I mean, if IU had a great offensive line and a really powerful running back, people probably think he was a great quarterback. But you know, he's probably not the kind of guy that is going to carry a team. But yeah, he's been solid, and it's hard to complain too much about what he's done this year.
So he's basically like Ricky Stanzi on an awful football team.
Pretty much.
No, I mean, let's be honest. If Ricky Stanzi had Indiana supporting cast, I don't think that people would be very impressed with him.
He would be on the Davey O'Brien semifinals list regardless. He could play by himself.
Yeah, oh yeah. What am I talking about?
Without even a line in front of him.
Yes.
Be beautiful. Heismanzy. the running game seems to be kind of spread out between Willis and McCray, with Evans getting some kind of, you know, some looks, as you said, in the wildcat formation. As the numbers aren't great, but they're not terrible. Have you been all right with how the running game has gone so far this year?
Well, it's been okay. Again, it's been a struggle when they've gotten into the red zone to score. They've fallen short in a couple of fourth and one, third and one type situations. But I've been pretty happy with Darius Willis. Really, his numbers have been put up in four games. In the first game, he got three carries and fumbled on one of them and then sat on the bench for the rest of the time. Then he missed the second game with injury. So really, his 400 and some yards have been put up in four games. So he's really been pretty productive. He's broken a couple of big touchdown runs. One was against Michigan and the other one was against Northwestern. So in that sense, I think Willis, as a redshirt freshman, is certainly one of the bright spots this year and someone we can be excited about for the future. So it's been okay. Marcus Thigpen was obviously the guy last year, and he broke a lot of big plays but wasn't really an inside runner. So I think Willis is probably the best true running back, you know, the kind of guy that can run between the tackles that IU has had in a while. So it's been okay, and I'm fine with the wildcat approach. I think for a program in IU's situation, any kind of advantage you can gain with a scheme like that is fine with me. So it's been okay, but like the rest of the offense, it's stalled at key moments.
Have they just given up on Demetrius McCray, or has he been hurt, or why has he just fallen off the map in the last few games?
He's not been hurt, to my knowledge, or at least not rated, not listed as being out of the game. I think it's just been a matter of deciding that Willis fits the role that he was going to fit. Trey Burgess is more of a big back, so he tends to get in some of the short yardage situations. So I think it's just a matter of the carries not being there, that they want to put the ball in Willis's hands as much as they can.
Now, looking at the game-by-game numbers, it looks like McCray hasn't even really carried the ball for about 3 weeks. Is that right?
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've just whiffed on it on the injury report. And as I noted on the blog,
I don't see anything in here that says injuries. I think it's mm-hmm. it's just that I think you're right. I think they probably want to get the ball to Willis as much as possible. He's proven himself as a legitimate threat. Receivers, there's no one that stands out quite like the player that will not be named. We're not going to talk about him. We're not going to mention James MFH.
Somewhere, Adam Shada just curled up into a fetal position. We're not going to be able to talk to him for about a week just by saying his name.
Yeah, if Adam Shada is listening to this, believe me, he's curled up in a fetal position long, long before James Hardy. But Tandon Dawes is having a pretty good year. Apparently, they're trying to get the ball in Evans' hands as much as possible, and Belcher's been all right. Are there any things that really stand out in the receiver core?
Well, Tandon Dawes, as you mentioned, has really impressed me. I wasn't he was okay as a freshman last year, but he's really excelled and is pretty versatile. He can go down the field. He can catch the ball short, doesn't seem to mind going across the middle, and obviously has put up a lot of numbers. He and Chapel obviously have a pretty strong connection. Belcher, who, by the way, is from the same town as James Hardy. I just have to make sure I get his name out there in case any of you know who we're talking about.
Off our podcast now.
Belcher's a big target. He's about 6'5", and, I think people might have expected a little bit more from him, but really Doss playing the way he has really taken a lot of the opportunities. But I'm pretty happy with the receiving core. Terrence Turner has played okay as well. Belcher has been fine. Evans has been there. But, yeah, Doss has really stood out. And, again, really the offensive skill positions, I guess, are where IU might have the most hope as they look towards 2010, unfortunately, with the receivers, Darius Willis and Chapel certainly back as a senior.
And you kind of brought it up there that I look across the depth chart and it's kind of youth everywhere. There's not, aside from, a couple of senior backs, doesn't seem like there's going to be a whole lot. I guess there's a couple seniors on the line. But it doesn't seem like you guys are going to be losing a whole lot at the end of the year. Is that right?
That's true, yeah. The offense is very young. The defense is kind of the exact opposite. I think there are 7 seniors that are starting on the defense. But yeah, on offense, there's a lot. Most of the contributors will be back.
Now, any discussion of this year's Hoosiers would be incomplete without talking about Middleton and Mayberry. Two guys who I think are criminally neglected by people who follow the conference just because, you know, no offense, but they're playing for Indiana. Mm-hmm. But there's been a couple other players on this defense that have looked pretty damn good this year too. Curlew's been fantastic. What are your impressions of the defense to date?
Well, it's been okay. IU seems to always struggle in the secondary, and that seems to have been the case again. But yeah, they have really been able to pressure the quarterback. In 07, of course, that was a big strength with Greg Middleton leading the nation in sacks that year. He sort of fell off last year, and Curlew picked up. And then the two of them have both played pretty well this year. So I'm reasonably pleased with the way those guys have played. The overall defensive numbers haven't been anything to write home about, but they played well enough to come close to winning enough games that if IU'd been able to close out the Michigan and Northwestern games, they'd be in decent shape. So yeah, I think they've been okay, and I think Curlew and Middleton both probably have some NFL potential. And as you know, Mayberry is a solid guy who's a linebacker and is all over the place. And yeah, no complaints about those guys at all.
You bring up the Michigan game. Okay, scale of 1 to 10. How bad of a screw job was that interception call?
Oh, I thought it was probably a 7 or 8. I mean, I don't know what the guy on the field saw. I think it would have been tougher to reverse than people maybe give it credit for. But yeah, I think it was a simultaneous possession situation, and IU should have had the ball. But that's just kind of the reality of playing at Michigan. You know, I know that everybody has their thoughts about what it's been like to play in Assembly Hall as a visiting team over the years, and I think going to Michigan's kind of the same way. So if you want to win there, you have the opportunity to get a big lead, as IU certainly had in that game, then you just got to do it. But yeah, I thought it was a bad call, but IU was still 70 yards away. It there's no guarantee, even as well as the offense played in that game, that we would have won anyway.
Oops, pal, after you said that, I started thinking about what the 1 to 10 scale of screw jobs would be, with 10 being like Bret Hart at the Survivor Series.
The Montreal screw job.
The Montreal screw job. And 1 being, I would assume, the personal foul call on Michigan State last week. Oh, I just love doing that to them. John, you'd mentioned that there's a little bit of trouble with the secondary. It's kind of, have there been injuries in the secondary? Because it's a kind of a veteran group. There were 3 seniors listed to begin with, at least this year.
Yeah, the cornerbacks have just in the last couple of weeks started to get hit with the injury bug a little bit. The safeties, Nick Polk and Austin Thomas, are the two most experienced guys back there, and they've been reasonably healthy. But yeah, there've been some injury problems. Chris Atkins has had some problems, and Donald Jones has been out recently. So that has started to set in a little bit, but I don't know. It's been a pervasive problem for a long time at IU, even when they have good players like they did a couple years ago with Tracy Porter and Leslie Majors, just has never really put together a dominant pass defense in the last 15 years or more.
Are there any other injuries of note coming into this week?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. Darius Willis always seems to be at least on the questionable list with an ankle problem. It's been nagging him, and they've had a couple of injury problems on the line. But other than that, unless something's changed in the last day and I haven't seen it. I think the cornerback positions would be the main area of concern. Not quite reaching your level of concern at the running back position.
Sure. It's hard to get there. When you guys start rolling out Pocky O'Meara as a cornerback, we'll...
Which, by the way, you're free to do.
Right. We'll trade him to you.
Absolutely. Every week.
Yeah. We'll trade you the awesomely named walk-on halfback in exchange for a bucket of sunflower seeds and a space heater. As
it's out there.
It's pretty cold. No doubt about it. We'd be remiss if we didn't at least discuss the situation with Kellen Lewis, who is apparently having a little trouble at Valdosta State now. He, you know, kind of flamed out at Indiana too. Was there ever really a sign that it was going to be quite this bad for him?
I never got that sense. And certainly football players in Bloomington aren't under the same microscope that basketball players are under. But through the 2007 season, I don't think I'd ever heard any suggestion of a problem with him. You know, of course, that was the year when it all started to unravel, when he was then suspended for spring practice and played really poorly as a junior, then switched to receiver and got thrown off the team and all that. But before, through the point of the 2007 season and the bowl game, I'd never heard of a problem. So I didn't anticipate it, and it's disappointing to me. I certainly enjoyed watching the guy play, and he and the guy that you guys don't like had a pretty good thing going in 06 and 07. So, you know, I'm sad to see it happen like this. Sadder for his girlfriend if the allegations are true. It's disappointing. It's sad to see somebody waste that kind of talent. But I didn't have, if you suggested such a thing 2 years ago, I wouldn't have had any reason to think it was going to be true.
Well, he was in the pantheon of scary Indiana quarterbacks. I mean, it was him and Randall L. were the two that always came to mind, but they just routinely beat the hell out of us. And with the help of, you know, the receiver that will not be named. I was at the 07 game.
Yeah, the backflip into the end zone and all
the
back, that.
Yeah, after the pass to the flat, fumble recovery, 75-yard with the backflip. And up until at that time, I thought it was the most embarrassing Iowa loss I had witnessed. And then Northwestern came to town like 3 weeks later and
blew that out of the water.
Yeah. He was an absolutely terrifying quarterback. And it didn't make a whole lot of sense to us last year when they were talking about benching or moving a receiver until all the other information came out. I'm with you. It's kind of sad to see it happen.
Yeah, I think that was just purely a leadership decision of Lynch not willing to trust the guy to be his quarterback, which I guess said enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Well, we'll get you out of here with your prediction for the week. What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, I think it may be a little more low scoring, but I'm thinking probably Iowa 21, Indiana 10. I'd love to think it would be different, but I have a feeling you guys will handle us with maybe not as much ease as you would hope, but it won't be a nail biter at the end. I'll be happy to be proven wrong, and we've certainly had a reasonable amount of success against Iowa in the last few years, but we'll see.
Yeah, reasonable amount of success is lowballing it. You know, we have a certain thing with Penn State where for some reason, no matter how good we are or how good they are, we're always competitive with them. And Indiana's almost become that team for us in the Ferentz era.
Well, if it weren't for Northwestern, anyway.
Right. Well, yeah, them too. We don't talk about them, though. Because they're just Northwestern.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Come on.
But I'm completely with you. I don't think there's any way that Iowa covers a 17.5-point spread against Indiana. I just don't see any chance of that.
Have they taken that line off the board since the Robinson and Richardson news came out, or is it still there?
I haven't looked, but I'm assuming it's still there.
I would bet Texas with a dollar sign on Indiana then.
Thank you, Burt Reynolds.
No, that was French Stewart.
Oh, that's right. It was French Stewart. Oh, I have to edit this now. Thank you, French Stewart. I think you're pretty much right on in the prediction. That'd be about where I'd put it too. And with that, John, we thank you for joining us tonight. And, we wish you the absolute worst of luck for the next 4 days and, all the best from that point on.
Well, hey, same to you, and enjoy the game.
And that's it for episode 10. I'd like to thank John for joining us from Crimson Quarry to discuss this week's Indiana game. Next week it's Northwestern, and you know what that means. That's right, we're making fun of nerds. So be sure to join us then. Thanks for listening. Until then, go Hawkeyes. Hawkeye State, out.